Welcome to Sofa Security Chat Chat, episode 238 for the 31st of March, 2016. Coming to you live from B-Sides in Austin, Texas. I'm Chester Wisniewski, and I'm on the line with Paul Ducklin. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Hello, Chester. It sounds enjoyably busy on your end. You went there to do your talk on Internet of Things security / insecurity, didn't you? Just like we talked about in the live podcast we did a couple of weeks ago. Did anyone come up with any questions or ideas that help us solve the security problems without the delay that we've been fearing?
Well, you know, it's such a complicated topic because all these different devices have different flaws and mistakes that have been made or assumptions that have been made in them. So we did have a couple interesting ideas from some of the attendees that came up to me over lunch saying, you know, have you thought about trying this or have you thought about trying that? And of course, all those ideas were very constructive, but would apply to one particular problem set. You know, when we talked about this in the security SOS, we talked about how basically none of these devices are using encryption, for example. So you might be able to secure the device in a way to make sure that it's only talking to the correct cloud service or maybe only talking to, you know, particular devices. But that doesn't change the fact that anybody able to intercept the communications is going to be able to read that. And of course, there is no really fixing that because if the data's in the clear, the data's in the clear. I mean, there's no magical way to force a device that can't encrypt things to encrypt it. So that's sort of the conundrum we're in at the moment with IoT. And Ed Skoutis was presenting before me this morning the keynote. He was talking about another side of IoT related to projects he had built in his house, which was really interesting to me because he was basically exploiting some of the holes in the frameworks to make these IoT devices do really cool things that are fun for him to play with.
Yes, I guess one man's jailbreak that's used to install a security fix that isn't available from the vendor yet is another guy's cyber criminal O-Day.
Yeah, and that's precisely the case, but the audience was quite receptive to having a bit of a conversation about, I think in particular, people are interested in figuring out ways to help their family and friends through this, right? People here are not just security savvy, but they're active enough that they've chosen to take 2 days out of their week and come to an event to learn more about security. So I think these folks will do a pretty good job of determining the risk of their own devices that they've purchased and want to play with.
Indeed, because it's one thing to find a hole, isn't it? And it's another to pitch that story in a way that doesn't sound like the end of the world, but also in a way that's comprehensible to non-technical people so that they want to start taking security more seriously.
Yeah, precisely. And so folks that want to know more about this, of course, can watch the replay of our SOS recording. But more than that, I've been developing more and more content and some visual content and things for presentation here at B-Sides and for some other events I'm doing around this. So I think we'll probably do another, you know, similar type thing where we can record the slides or make them available for people that want to reference them or perhaps use them to educate their own staff or their family and friends about some of the risks of these devices and what are safe and not safe things to do. So since we're talking about exploiting vulnerabilities, let's talk a little bit about the FBI and Apple. Clearly, the FBI first asked the judge to suspend any movement to force Apple to do something about a week ago. And then this week, FBI came back to court and said, oh, don't worry, all solved. Carry on. Is this a good thing or a bad thing for security?
I wrote it up on Naked Security as saying that there was a positive and a negative part to this. The plus side is that essentially both Apple and the FBI got what they wanted without the need to go through the hard work of setting a formal legal precedent. And the negative is that no precedent was set. So it seems entirely likely that this whole thing will happen again sometime in the future.
Yeah, it was my impression of things that this is more of a social and even political question than it is a technical question. And that's why we're going to see it, you know, on and off until ultimately either laws are changed or a very high court has to make a decision, because these issues are complicated. And I was on the airplane yesterday and the flight attendant came up to me, started talking to me about my shirt, which said Break a Hacker's Heart, one of our Sophos shirts. And says, oh, do you know anything about this FBI thing? And I said, yeah. And about 5 minutes later, she brings me a copy of the newspaper with the editorial section with people that wrote in either supporting or decrying the fact that, you know, the FBI had broken into this phone. And what I read into those public letters to the newspaper was the lack of understanding the general public still has about what the question really is here. Like the question in the newspaper seemed to be more about, are you helping the terrorists or are you helping the police? As opposed to, you understand that a break in our armor is a break in our armor against all adversaries, which is really what the issue is about.
Trade secrets have a way of becoming non-secret, don't they? By the way, Chester, a commenter on Naked Security, he's quite a regular commenter. He goes by the name Forecaster, where four is the digit. He wrote what I thought was a fantastic summary of that. So I wouldn't mind reading that comment out. It goes like this. Thank goodness it was the FBI who managed to crack that iPhone. That's their job, and I hope they succeed in catching the criminals. They can't be expected to tell Apple or anyone else how they did it. At the same time, it will now be Apple's job to close the security gap before less scrupulous people can use it.
Yeah, and it's also the controversy about, you know, should the NSA disclose zero-day vulnerabilities to vendors when they find them, right? Because that's one of the things that allows the NSA to potentially spy on America's enemies and keep the nation safe. But on the same, you know, on the same note, we don't know how many of the enemies know about the same vulnerabilities. Moving along, I was sitting at home working on putting the final touches on my presentation before I came here to Austin, and I saw a tweet from my friend and former colleague Ashkan Sultani saying, "Oh my God, CNBC is sending everyone's password to like scorecard research and all in Google's double click." And why does CNBC have people's passwords?
It's a good old, hey, you can, here's our password strength meter. And instead of being some JavaScript that runs in your browser and keeps everything private, my understanding is the password was kind of offloaded. And HTTP was used. And the data also found its way into URLs that were sent to third parties.
Now, in the last story I wanted to cover this week, it actually is interesting to me because about a week and a half ago, I was down in Seattle at the University of Washington, and I went out with some of the crew from the IT security team there. And one of them says to me, "Well, I'm not sure you're going to be able to get a hold of me for the next little while." And I said, "Well, why is that?" And he said, "Well, I'm serving on a federal grand jury for the next 3 months, and they can call me anytime, and I have to, you know, over the course of 3 months, go in and sit on a panel that decides whether to indict someone so that the proceedings can go further." So it's very different than serving on a normal jury where you might serve your jury duty and then go home. You actually have to serve for a period of time, and you may actually be on multiple cases along the way because you're not actually convicting someone. You're simply deciding whether the evidence is great enough to indict them. So you know, I can understand, based on hearing stories like that, one, the fear of the impact on one's personal life it might put on an individual juror, yet many of us have a very strong sense of civic duty. Of course, it's very important for us to serve on these juries because it is our legal system. It's not surprising to me, I guess, that scammers have decided to play on that. Can you describe what it is that these guys are doing to kind of leverage that sense of duty?
This scam, which was recently publicly warned about by the U.S. court service itself, it intrigued me because it's kind of the worst of both worlds mix of those traditional fake malware on your computer scams and lock screen ransomware, which of course we don't see much anymore. In other words, the guys call you and they use VoIP, for example, so that the number looks local. And they have a nice looking website that they'll give you the URL to behind to kind of give you some belief that they're talking the truth. And the connection with the lock screen ransomware is it's, hey, we're involved in the judiciary. You were supposed to come to jury service. You haven't shown up. As you know, there's a fine for that. And you're in a jolly great deal of trouble. Just like in the lock screen ransomware, we're going to fine you for piracy unless you pay the ticket now. The cybercrime angle is the fact that the internet lets them do this from a distance. It lets them appear to be local. It lets them back up their scam with what looks like a fairly believable set of web infrastructure, if you like, that might convince someone who's not thinking clearly because they're now panicking, believing that they have effectively broken the law and they're in some kind of potentially criminal trouble. So it just goes to show that you can teach a new dog old tricks.
Yeah, I'm afraid that these problems are never really going to go away because we're always vulnerable to false communications because we don't really have a reliable way of identifying people in any of the means we use to communicate. you think that caller ID is a method of validation, but we know it's not. As you pointed out, they can, you know, fake that with voice over IP. But more than that, you know, even if we go into a post telephone world where we're all using some sort of instant messenger to communicate or whatever, it seems like we don't have a solid grip on identity, and we have a tendency to want to believe what we see.
The US courts have actually gone public with a part of their protocol that actually allows you, if you know and remember this, it gives you absolute confidence that a phone call telling you you've been fined must be a scam. And that is that apparently the only way you can be fined for failing to do your jury service is by a fine imposed by a judge in open court when you are present. Therefore, if someone phones you up and says you've been fined, clearly they are telling lies.
Do get the word out to your American friends. Let them know, and especially the more vulnerable in the population that probably aren't as technically savvy, that may not understand things like caller ID can be faked, and make sure that they're telling their elderly parents and their aunts and uncles, etc., about these things.
Yeah, and again, you know, we've said this a number of times before in the chat when we've talked about fake support calls and when we've talked about spammers asking you to get involved in one of their schemes. There are those people who say, well, tie them up, waste their time, then they can't call the next guy. I'm still saying, keep it simple. When a scammer calls you, your best and immediate defense, put the phone down, don't say a word. There's no point in trying to be clever with someone that you already know is a crook.
That is a great piece of advice and a great conclusion to Sofa Security Chat Chat 238. As always, please visit nakedsecurity.sophos.com for all the latest news. The podcast is available on RSS, on iTunes, it's on the TuneIn app, and anywhere other fine podcasts are found. And until next time, stay secure.